Trip Rocon, Joe with Anna DeVlantis, off for another day of broadcast insolence, my friends.
Buckle up. What a day. What an afternoon.
It is.
Breaking news.
Yeah. So, and I'm preparing myself. I'm strapping myself in for Thursday, which is going to be one of the craziest news days of the year.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Think about what that means.
That's
think about this
something.
Year, right? So we have simultaneously at locally here, it's going to be the end of the Van Dyke trial in terms of witnesses, we believe. And then closing arguments are initially going to be scheduled. We're told now the initial guidance is for Friday for that. And then we also have the hearings on Thursday morning of Dr. Blasey Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And then Judge Kavanaugh, back-to-back in the Senate hearing room,
yeah,
starting Thursday morning, and then we will have all the analysis throughout the day there. I would take the day off work and just plant yourself by your radio or your television or however you consume us or your computer or your phone, whatever you happen to have to plant yourself by, because this is going to be all right easy.
It is. It is. There'll be a lot to digest. You saw a little bit of what you might expect Brett Kavanaugh to say in that Martha McCallum Fox News interview last night. You could see a lot of that playing into how he'll answer questions at the hearing. But they'll go even farther, I would imagine.
Yes. And you also, yesterday, I just joked about the thing. We're going to be having to discuss what sex is, right? Because there's all these allegations that he either exposed himself or, you know, acted inappropriately in a boorish way, right? The Blasey Ford allegation is that he was wrestling with her and put his hand over her mouth, was trying to expose himself, but wasn't successful in doing it before he was pulled off and blah, 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 blah. So there's going to be a conversation about what sex is, because now that he said he's a virgin. I was just kind of kidding about that. And then 2 hours later, two hours later, Michael Avenatti, who I have seen just about enough of.
Yeah.
Is on CNN saying, well, what are we going to have a conversation about what sex is? Yes. Apparently you are.
He did say that after you predicted it. It's going to come up.
And he apparently has, he says multiple, meaning more than one. I think in his case, might be two people that he's going to bring forward within the 48 hours. Within 48 hours. So 48 hours.
They say by Wednesday. I don't know what time Wednesday. So tomorrow.
Yeah. He's going to be dropping more people on top of this.
But then there's some stuff flying out there that he may not be able to produce exactly what he's promised.
No.
We'll see. We'll see. He has been calling into question the yearbook. And the yearbook, how he's trying to interpret high school language to mean some pretty nasty derogatory stuff that he says that his clients will be able to back up, how this was some kind of conquest battle amongst elite prep school boys to go after women. And that his client, whoever this is, should he produce this person tomorrow, would be able to tell that story.
I think elite prep schools are taking down the chin here. I'm personally offended.
As a product of one?
As a product of one, yeah. I don't know how... I don't know how that's all going to break out, because if you go back and you look at your own high school, I mean, you just Kevin and Violetta is like 2 weeks ago, so they get to look at
right. They would be fresh in their minds.
The ink hasn't dried on their yearbooks yet, but I mean, I was thinking about my yearbook. First of all, I look a little like a thin-necked version of Brett Kavanaugh in my yearbook picture.
Same hairstyle,
exact same haircut.
Mm-hmm.
I should get that, bring that in for tomorrow.
You should read some of it.
I should,
you think
probably.
You'd be embarrassed by anything people wrote or anything you
for
wrote.
For sure, yeah. For sure.
The high school yearbooks.
Yeah, but there was nothing, we weren't joking about assault, I don't think.
No,
I don't
recall that either in ours.
I mean, or joking about, and I'm trying to think, but now, assault or conquests? See, there's a lot of that sort of conquest thing. I will say this, it is... it's really pretty creepy to call out a singular woman that they're all claiming to have had relations with.
That's what I'm talking about. That supposedly they mentioned her name, and that her name connected to this sort of conquest brag, for lack of a better way to say it. She initially signed that letter supporting Brett Kavanaugh and his character and what she knows about him from high school and beyond. And she has since withdrawn her name from that letter. because of that.
Am I crazy on this? But isn't it interesting that there were these letters of where months ago they got the high school people to all get around and say what a great guy he was?
Maybe they knew this was coming.
They must have, right? Because do they do this for everybody else? Do they go to the high schools and go, listen, you know, in high school, I mean, I've never thought about these people in terms of high school.
Well, you've seen the ads for Kavanaugh from mostly a lot of women who know him in those ads.
Right. But isn't that interesting? What were they setting up? They must have been setting up for. I mean, other than the fact that obviously this is a year where suburban women Republicans are losing support with suburban women, mm-hmm. and Roe versus Wade is a major issue, right? That's an overarching umbrella issue over this.
Yes.
So that may be the reason, but going back and finding the women from high school to back them up early it's got me thinking. All right, more on that. Everybody relax for a second. I can barely relax.
Including you.
I got a pair of tickets to go see the Blackhawks home opener Sunday, October 7th, a week from Sunday. That's a 6 o'clock Sunday night game. It's one of my favorite times to see a hockey game against the Maple Leafs, an original six matchup, and a special pregame ceremony honoring the great Stan Mikita, the late great Stan Mikita. Don't want to miss that. And I got your tickets, and they're good tickets, and I got them in my hot little hand right now. I'll be giving away after 4 o'clock. Judy, what's coming up in the news at the bottom of the hour?
Bill Cosby being processed for prison.
Watch Micah and Joe, Michael Matera and Joe Donlin weeknights on WGN TV News at 9.
Right, our legal analyst who's working triple duty this week for us, Mr. Mike Monaco, has joined us in the studio. And Mike, I would ask you, before we get to the Van Dyke trial, which we're going to get to after 3:40, we've got Ben Bradley who's joining us right now as well. And I would just like to get, and Ben, I'm going to allow you a moment to ask the esteemed Mike Monaco himself his thoughts on what we saw at the Cosby trial today. Yeah. Is being walked off in handcuffs.
Yeah.
Pretty startling. Did you expect 3 to 10 years?
I did expect 3 to 10 years.
You did. All right.
I mean, he was facing. Mike, what's the story behind that? Why is the range 3 to 10 years?
That's the state of Pennsylvania, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. There, they have this policy where you get a range, and then after 4 years, you're eligible for parole. And
I believe 3 years in this case, they said.
Well,
is that right?
3 or 4, it's depending. It's 3 years is the minimum he has to do, according to the reports, but he may have to do more than that for parole. I'm not sure.
And would it just be good behavior at that point, or what are they
good
looking
behavior,
at 3 years?
Normally, what you'd look for in parole have you done advanced at all, while you're serving time, did you do anything? Now, a man of his age, 81, it's unlikely he's going to do much in terms of.
Say he does have to go through these classes.
That's true.
And protocol training and
because
all that.
That's another difference between. Pennsylvania has a committee that decides if you are a violent predator, and they found that he was, mm-hmm. and the judge agreed.
And now he has that label, a sexually violent predator. But you had those two interesting, startling scenes. The one just outside the courtroom, inside the courthouse, when Bill Cosby, 81 years old, led away in handcuffs, wearing suspenders, police surrounding him on either side. And then in the pouring rain, just outside that courthouse, you had a host of Cosby accusers stand out there and talk about their long, long journey to justice. And then immediately following those emotional statements, you had Bill Cosby's publicist stand up.
And that was terrible.
And called this a sex war. He referenced Jesus. He said, I believe and think it's important to point out that this has been the most racist and sexist trial in the history of the United States. Cosby's publicist went on to say, white women accused him. They were making money by accusing a black man of being sexual predator.
He said the racist, sexist mass media, the whole system was basically racist and sexist. And I suppose you could argue that the sexist system is kind of what empowered a male celebrity to get away with what he got away with for so many years. You think about the enablers around him and, you know, the fact that the DA initially didn't even bring charges. Prosecutors said they didn't have enough evidence. So Andrea Konstad had a civil trial where she sued him. And it only progressed from there. There was a new DA who felt he had enough to go forward.
And now there were nine In addition to Constance, there were nine other victims there today. Mm-hmm. Three of them were part of the five who testified as at the trial. In other words, the first time they tried the case, the judge only allowed one other witness to testify, that she too had been the subject of this kind of violent attack. The next time he had five other persons, other women testify, and that turned the tide for the prosecution.
Mm-hmm. It was very dramatic to see him in handcuffs.
It was.
It was a moment where you do stop and you think, chilling oh my image. God, that's Cliff Huxtable.
Right. That's the Jell-O guy.
And guys, so many of us watched, we watched the Cosby Show thinking, hey, look at that family. Wouldn't we like to be that family?
Perfect
family. Wouldn't
we
like our family to be that fun?
Or wouldn't you like a dad, isn't he the greatest dad?
Right. Right, and the family all getting along, and even when they're not getting along, they're getting along.
They knew how to work through it.
Strong parental units. I mean, what he was trying to do as an artist in the 1980s, as a producer and as an artist, is he was trying to create, trying to change the paradigm of how African-American families are portrayed on television and are seen in popular culture. And he did it. And it's one of the most important social media acts, before there was such a thing as social media. It's one of the most important acts of art propelling the society forward. Done. And now you have. But in the meantime, the guy was drugging women to have sex with him, which I to this moment, I mean, it makes so little sense what was going on there. But sometimes it's almost, you have to separate the artist from the art. In moments like this. And so I don't think we should take away what his great contribution was to America and to African-American life in America, right? I mean, that is his contribution to that was enormous. But he was just clearly a deeply flawed guy who had this predatory tendency, and he worked on it. And I mean, in a lot of these cases, these were women who were willing to be involved with him on some level, and yet he still felt compelled to drug them.
Yep.
Yeah, that was. It's more than just the sex. It's the violence of it.
And his wife stood by him throughout all of that. Imagine her.
Right.
Probably was hard for her to believe it, too. I mean, I think she accepted their extramarital affairs. He admitted to extramarital affairs prior to all of this. But this is something, my God.
Right. After the baby was born in L.A., right? Didn't he have a child? Remember, was it a rondo? Remember, he had a rondo?
Mm-hmm. But don't forget, he was in the middle of lecturing people about personal responsibility. He was on that tour when this thing broke about
And how young men should wear their pants.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Telling
really,
people what to do.
Interesting moment in American history. You know, it's just the very, very flawed dude. All right. More on that a little bit later. What else is coming up?
Coming up at 4 o'clock. I know you're going to be talking about it on the radio between now and then. At 4 o'clock, we're going to show you this dramatic animation that Jason Van Dyke's defense attorneys played repeatedly in court today, attempting to show jurors Officer Van Dyke's perspective. But immediately, prosecutors jumped in to point out what that video did not include. We'll show it to you today at 4.
All right, Ben, we'll see you then. We've got the WGN News with Judy Pilot coming your way, too. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis.
Yes.
Right here on 720 WGN Chicago and CLTV. And we're joined by Mike Monaco, our legal analyst, and also Eric Rung, our reporter who was in the courtroom today for the trial of Jason Van Dyke. And the big evidence that was presented today was this video recreation, animation of the incident that showed it not only from the video perspective that we've already seen from the dash cam video, but also the shooting of Laquan McDonald from different angles, almost like how a video game would do it, where it would go around, gives you a 360 angle of this. And it was a recreation done by this company that does forensic recreations of these things so that you can get a better sense of it. And the idea here was to try to put you in this is a defense piece of evidence, and it's to try to put you in the position of Jason Van Dyke to look at this from literally his perspective of Laquan McDonald passing him. And at one point, It appears slowing down and dipping his shoulder to his left, which would have his right shoulder to his left, sort of opening his shoulders up, which is what the testimony has been. And in doing that, the defense was hoping that they would prove that Jason Van Dyke saw a threat in him, because he was close to Jason Van Dyke with the knife, and that he appeared to be just about to be turning. However, and I'd like you to take us through this, Eric, what happened in the courtroom was much more a conversation about why it appears that Laquan McDonald's wearing a hood, like a hoodie with his hood up, which he did not have that night, his hood up. There was why he appears to be larger than he was in real life on the video. And they impeached basically the video itself for being prejudicial.
Right. So Jason Fries is the person that came up with, he owns a San Francisco firm that does these video recreations, animations, basically, using video, laser technology, so on and so forth for the measurements here. Now, what the prosecution's, special prosecutor did here was basically said it continually, this is your creation, right? You made this. You drew this, right? And he said to say, yes, of course I did. And then she went through the video over and over and over again and pointed out inaccuracies in it. Marilyn Ross is her name. I'm sorry. So she would say, well, there was a squad car in this video. You know that, correct? And he would say, yes. Well, why didn't you put that in? Was like, well, because it didn't match up. It wouldn't have any difference with the measurements or the task that I was given in this case, which was to show the shooting. So she went through several what she called inaccuracies, and again called it his creation time and time again. Mm-hmm. The hood. One of the other things that came up that was very interesting is they were talking about the other animations that he's done. He said, usually we use more or less basically crash test dummies. We don't use real images of people in our videos.
And they call them bipeds. There's like a video biped, just a human silhouette.
Right. But in this case, they did decide to do that and also added skin color to, obviously, the people involved.
And in doing that, in watching this testimony today, in doing that, as just a viewer of it, I was struck in thinking, if I were a juror, what would I take away from this? Mm-hmm. And I would take away from this that this was that there was an intent to show menace here of this young man based on size and based on his race. That's at least the way that it came across to me as an independent viewer watching this. And I happen to be, very pro-police in these kinds of cases. So I thought this was not good for the defense.
But the positive thing, I guess I would ask you, for the defense might be that you actually, they're arguing that Van Dyke saw this from a very different perspective from this video that is ingrained, cemented in our brains, and that you need to see it from his perspective. And I wonder if
that's their entire argument, is that he was a threat. And you don't see that on the video that everybody has seen time and time again. We're going to show it to you.
But there's also that clock you pointed out,
right,
where it comes down from 30 feet to, what, 12 feet?
About 15. I believe. And so what this was, when they were showing the animated video, they also had a kind of a counter at the top, and it was distance from Van Dyke to Laquan McDonald. And as I didn't notice it the first couple of times I watched it, but then it was, of course, pointed out by the defense attorney here. And he said, look at the distance. Can you see that he's closing the distance? And you could see as they would go through this video that it did go down, and he did close the distance. And he said, Mr. Fries, is Laquan McDonald closing in on Jason Van Dyke? And the answer was yes. Now, if you look at the video, though, it's still looks as if he is veering off. Mm-hmm. But what they're arguing is that when you're taking a look at it from his perspective, and even though it looks as if he's kind of veering off, he's actually, they are getting closer together. And by the time I think he shot, he said he closed from 30 to 15 in about 4 seconds.
Right. And so it does, he feels like he's being rushed at that moment, even though he's a beam of him.
Right.
He's going parallel.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Kind of in front of him. And there is a moment where he slows down, and there is in the animation, which is the testimony that we've seen, a bit of a shoulder turn, which toward the officers, which is when Jason Van Dyke, in a split second, I mean, a tenth or twentieth of a second, starts to fire his weapon. And this is really the question. I think, yeah, they get to about 15 by the time Laquan McDonald is next to him. 13, I'm sorry. 13 was the closest moment right there. And so we're watching recreations here on CLTV. We're watching this over.
Right.
It is one of those pieces of testimony that I mean, I get the sense that it was impeached, but if it holds, it's a central argument of defense here, Mike Monaco. Do you think this will help them or hurt them?
I think it helps.
Helps
the Van Dyke's defense, because his lawyers have said from the beginning it was a different view that he had, and that's what this is. This is the different view. Their opening statement, they said, you'll see that Officer Van Dyke had a different view of this young man, and that's what this video shows. And the judge let it in evidence. It's in evidence. It was allowed to be in evidence. There had to be a certain, certain credibility for it. The judge to let it in, because apparently Freeze has done this before many, many times. Mm-hmm. He's an expert in this kind of thing. It's not intended to be an accurate. That's another question. It's not intended to be completely accurate about all of the things in the picture. Freeze says it's just intended to show what happened at the time of the shooting.
Okay, and I guess that's really the issue, because on the cross-examination by the prosecution here, the assistant special prosecutor here, Ms. Ross, was making the argument that there were a number of inaccuracies in here. She was trying to impeach the entire notion of that.
Right.
That does tend to be effective with juries. Will it be more effective, do you think, if you were to risk something here at trial, Mike Monaco, esteemed trial lawyer, would you risk getting that image in their heads, even though it potentially could be impeached and backfire?
Yes, I think it's important to show the jury.
So they made the good move here.
That I think it was a good move. I mean, it wasn't the best possible work that Freeze could have done, I suppose. But in terms of showing that there was a different perspective, a different view that the police officer had at the time, right before he made took the shot. First shot, that was important.
Do you think the video stops, the animation stops, I think after four or five shots? Do you think that that's going to have a difference? It doesn't show Laquan McDonald on the ground and Jason Van Dyke continually firing.
Mm-hmm. Well, they had other witnesses too. I think the Freeze said he spoke to the other witnesses who said that the second shot was probably the shot that killed him.
That was the defense's forensic pathologist.
Right. Yes,
that's how he did that.
All right. So now if there are no other major witnesses, here's another witness, a witness that was going to testify to Laquan McDonald's whereabouts in the 24 hours prior, in which he was out doing other things, vandalizing other vehicles, and there have been a number of 911 calls concerning him. That witness is not going to get in based on relevance and not knowing, being able to really tie Laquan McDonald specifically to those 911 calls. So the question here is this: if this is the best last piece of the defense case, A, would you put Jason Van Dyke on the stand? If you don't put him on the stand, do you think you have enough for an acquittal, at least on first degree murder?
I don't think they should test. I don't think he'll test. I don't think the defense will ask him to testify. I don't think he will testify. I think this evidence that they showed today gives his perspective on what it was. It shows you that this is what the police do. Police are standing there in a violent particular place. This is not this is not an office. This is outside on the street, and I think it certainly at least. Shows that he should not be convicted of murder.
I looked at that video differently than you did, Ro. I felt from the perspective of the police, you could feel it. It felt more intense. It felt more as if they were rushing, that he was rushing him in a way that you didn't see from the side view.
Do you think it was effective?
I would say for the defense, it was effective.
Right. My only, when you see the video, yeah, just as we're sitting here and see the video, it was the post-showing of the video, impeachment of the video by the prosecution that may linger with the jury. That's what I'm thinking.
That's possible.
I think that the defense,
because if you're an expert, you should be impartial.
Unflappable.
You should be unflappable. You should be impartial. It by doing certain things, as you pointed out, Roe, they're trying to help the defendant. It looks like, which is not what they're supposed to do.
Right. That's what the prosecution kept bringing up.
Right.
And then the prosecutor in this case, the assistant prosecutor in this case, got a little chippy with him, with the witness.
It's a hard fought case,
and the judge stepped in for the witness.
Yeah.
So you wonder how that all goes too.
Well, she's been chippy with a couple of witnesses throughout this trial so far,
and judges protect witnesses,
right? Because they're going. What are they supposed to do? Right. They've been called to testify. They're not on trial,
right?
All right.
So it'll be interesting. I mean, it's a very close case, it seems to me, for the jury to find that there's some guilt here with respect to something.
With respect to something is a different question than respect to first-degree murder.
First-degree murder is tough to prove.
All right. Well, more to come. Thank you, gentlemen. Let's check in with Judy Pilak and find out what's coming up in the WGN newsroom at the top of the hour.
A body found in a Wakanda field is a missing Buffalo Grove man.
Tom Skilling joins us, being brought to us by PermaSeal Basement Systems. And Tom, Judy has to jump in over your own report and warn us about impending heavy weather. That means something.
Tom
really
and
big
I
is
are
happening
a team.
Here.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. There's a line that has a history of producing some 60-mile-an-hour wind gusts. What's been fascinating, though, is there aren't more reports coming in from, in terms of severe weather. Looks like there are two bowed lines, one heading into Rochelle right now and about ready to enter DeKalb County, and another one going into Amboy and areas like that, approaching Mendota. Imminently, the Rockford area has had some thunderstorms go through. These will come through in pieces, and if you get under one of the heavier ones, they're bubbling up into some strong winds. They'll bring some active winds down to the surface. But it looks like the period 6 to 10 p.m. brackets the highest risk of some thunderstorms. But they'll come across here in scattered fashion. Our models actually show them in a weakening phase as they come across, but if you're in one of those strong wind gust producing storms, that's kind of academic. So,
right.
And once it passes, we go into a 20-degree cooler weather regime for tomorrow. So, it's pretty expeditiously moving. These things are flying along at 50 miles an hour or more, and that always worries you because fast moving storms can produce some awfully strong winds.
And let's not forget that we stop and think about September and October as the fall, and we don't really think about thunderstorms, but that crazy cluster of thunderstorms and tornadoes that came through on that Sunday in 2013, was all from that's late season stuff, and we're just getting more of that now than we ever have.
Well, it's interesting. There are kind of two tornado seasons in Illinois. The big one is April, May, and June. And then there's a second kind of mini-max in tornado occurrence that occurs in autumn. And normally that's on about, long into October and November.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that tends to be a less prolific tornado-producing season. But again, that storm...
Plainfield was in the fall, wasn't it?
That was August.
Yeah.
Yeah, August. And that, by the way, is very strange. That's out of character. Because usually your thunderstorms in August are big rain producers. And to have a tornado of that intensity go through as it did in 1990. Then, of course, you were mentioning Washington, Illinois, and that was... Remember that? That was the day we had a Bears game, and there was concern. Had that thing held together, it would have come right into the city. Fortunately, it lost some of its oomph, but there was debris that was carried over 100 miles from the tornado strike in the Peoria, Washington area. People were picking up letters and canceled bills and all the rest.
I remember other people were picking them up for others and trying to get them to their rightful owners. And it was really touching to see that with photographs and things that were really important memories.
Yeah, it's amazing what these things are capable of doing. And what's happening now is we're tightening the north-south south temperature gradient as the shorter days lead to a buildup of more and more cool air up north. So that's why your storms start becoming larger scale and better developed at this time of the year. And if you do get into a thunderstorm situation, they can be, you know, a little dicey. You tend to watch these things pretty closely.
And you said the temperatures are really going to fall, Tom. What did you say, too? What are they going to get to?
Well, tomorrow we'll be hard-pressed to get, I think, above 64. So 64 tomorrow versus today's 83. Mm-hmm. And then we'll go back up to 70 for a day Thursday afternoon. And there's even a cooler slug of air that comes in Friday and Saturday. Saturday could find us in the 50s for daytime highs.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but then, you know, it bounces back again. And next week, we kind of sit astride the boundary between cool air up to the north and west and warm air to our south. And that's an area where you get a storm track to develop. So it may get wetter next week.
Well, we also have a Bears game on Sunday.
Yeah. Right.
Until the Bears are not in first place, I'm going to be monitoring this very closely.
I know.
And it's against Tampa Bay, who got smushed last night by Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And
yes.
And I've been looking at the ticket prices on that particular game.
Okay, are they going up a little bit?
Yeah.
They're moving in the upward direction?
Yes, they are significant. So that's going to be a sold-out stadium on Sunday. What can Bears fans expect?
Well, it looks like about 66 degrees. Not bad. You know, real nice autumn weather. Partly cloudy sky.
That's football weather, Tom.
Yeah. That's exactly right, Kevin. You know, that's what you want to see. So it looks okay from this distance. The rains would probably come in with a weather system beyond that as we get into Monday and even Tuesday. Those look like fairly wet days, but the game's over by then, so
yeah,
that's good.
That's a worry.
That is the way I look at it. The game's over by then. I'm always looking for when the game's over.
You can relax a little bit.
So I can actually exhale.
Breathe, exhale.
Maybe inhale and exhale.
It's going to be something, isn't it?
So no rain predicted for us.
No. Okay. No. It looks okay. Yeah. Good.
I don't want to give Mitchell Trubisky more things he has to worry about.
No.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want to spend too much on tickets either if you're going to run inside and hide in the bathroom or something.
That's true. It is amazing this year how ticket prices just on hope alone have jumped.
So true.
Oh, sure.
So true.
Well, you know, you've got a new coach, and he seems to have a very interesting approach to the whole thing, and I think the hopes are elevated.
A little more engaging than that last guy who had that pet monkey.
I'm still here.
Kevin, you got to be careful.
I know. He's always listening.
Jeez.
I forget.
I know.
Yeah.
Boy, you upset Coach Fox. You're going to have Creepy coming out of the basement.
The
whole group will start showing up. By the way, some late arriving reports now from Oregon out in Ogle County. Widespread tree damage across that area and with the storms going through. Here are several large trees and wires down in Milledgeville, which is out in Carroll County. That's out west of DeKalb County, out in northwest Illinois almost. And then in Polo, widespread wind damage across Polo, though limited details.
Is north of DeKalb?
Kind of west-northwest, row. Okay. Yeah.
Right. So along that line.
Right. And if you look at the
line
radar, there's a bowed line coming toward DeKalb. Now, when you get that little arc in the radar returns, that's usually a sign these things are gushing out, pretty good winds. And the cells that are involved there are moving along at 50, 55 miles an hour. So that always... That worries you.
So in the metropolitan area,
is this
thing going to be continuing to head due east, northeast? Where is it going?
It's heading slightly north of due east at about 50 miles an hour. Mm. And our models show this thing, again, kind of starting to scatter up and fall apart as it comes eastward. But, you know, with such wind aloft, even a shower could bring down some pretty good gusts with this thing.
Okay.
So that may be an academic point.
So O'Hare in the path of that?
Yeah, it looks like it right now.
Cubs Sox play tonight, Tom, here locally.
I think we're going to have some issues. There might be delays. I can't believe they'd call the game because this thing is moving along at a pretty good clip. And they're looking at the same radar, you know, out of the ballparks that we are.
Right.
So I think... I bring some rain gear along to be safe and be ready for perhaps some interruptions, but I can't believe it.
Although you have Major League Baseball officials looking at it And, you know, God knows what you're going to get there. And, I mean, it's better, I guess, than NFL officials who would not know if that's a storm. Right?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
They would sit around
exactly
and go,
right.
I don't know, you think that's a storm? I don't know. What is a storm?
You know, and I've discovered over the years, we're notoriously unsuccessful in predicting whether a game will be canceled. Just like, you know, kids call you in the wintertime when a storm's coming in, when we have school tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's
well,
a hard one.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I can tell you meteorologically what's going to be happening, but, you know, whether the decision's made to pull the plug on school or, you know, a game or something like that, it always kind of surprises me where we go. And I'm slow to come through and say, hey, I can't believe, though, tonight that, you know, this game's going to be anything beyond just interrupted.
Good.
So.
That's good.
Because you're on both sides, right?
Yeah, both sides.
Both sides of town.
That's
very
true.
Rarely do you get that in Chicago.
I know.
So
that's a good point.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes it rains on, you know how this can be around here. Sometimes it rains on one side of town, and then you go, did you see the storms last night? You go, what are you talking about?
Well, you know what? I really feel this is what we're going to see tonight. There'll be some pretty active cells that could be even damaging in spots, and then other areas will miss out on it. For instance, it looks like what's gone across Rockford and what's going into Boone County right now. Now, southern Boone County, it's raining cats and dogs under these things, and I'm sure there are strong winds. But the concentrated cells, there are two areas we're watching. One's going toward DeKalb right now in Genoa and crossing Rochelle. It looks like it's just the bulk of it's just gone across Rochelle. And then another one down toward Amboy. We're talking about
Rochelle's
Lee.
Rochelle's directly south of Rockford.
There. Yeah. And we're out. We're talking Lee and Ogle counties, soon to be DeKalb County. And by the way, there's a severe thunderstorm warning in effect for all those counties right now, all the way east into Kane County. So in the path of this is Sandwich, Hinckley, Aurora, St. Charles, Elgin, Crystal Lake, Marengo. Those all seem to be areas that, and Hinckley, Sheridan, areas like that, those seem to be immediately in the path of the thing. Now, we'll see, you know, to what extent they hold together as they go beyond that into DuPage and Cook, but I wouldn't be surprised the warnings will be extended eastward into the city, just given the history of this thing.
Okay.
You know? It's all over in a couple of hours.
That's what I always say.
Yeah. Don't worry about this.
I say that about the show every day. Don't worry. It'll all be over in a couple of hours.
I know.
Yeah.
Bill always tells me, he said, I walked by the boss's office, and I think he's giving you a gift. It's something about wrapping it up for you or something like that. And I said, you know, a gift is not necessary.
Oh.
But I think he had other intentions.
That is a broadcast slight.
Well, that's the kind of, I'm happy to share with you what we have to put up with here in the Action Web.
I understand.
You know.
What do you say back, Tom? Do you have any good ones, zingers?
Well,
that you got back
I tell
with?
Him that I wouldn't. I would imagine Brant Miller isn't treated like this.
Oh,
you know?
Right.
And
he gets respect.
Yeah, right. You know, and that. But then he tells me, put a lid on it. I'm going to, come out with a tell-all book about what really went on here.
Oh, my God. Yeah. How long have you two been together?
Listen to that.
Going on 20 years?
20 years you guys have worked together?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Just imagine.
It's. Can you imagine the mental carnage that has been inflicted upon Mr. Snyder after those years of working here?
Having gotten to meet Mr. Snyder, I believe that it's a two-way street right there.
Well, that's true. Bill can give as good as he gets.
Yeah, I think that's what we're getting here. I should mention that right now, Chicago Blackhawks chairman Rocky Wirtz is waiting in the PPG Paint screen room to talk to us about this book. This book called The Breakaway, the inside story of the Wirtz family business in Chicago Blackhawks.
Cool.
Is unflinching.
No.
You know, people always have always been sort of like a thing about the great dynastic families in Chicago, especially the sports families, but the business families. And then there's always people that, are ex parte from the family and they're always talking about the family.
Sure.
And this book addresses it all.
It doesn't hold back.
It does not hold back.
Family drama, everything.
Wow. Yeah. And so he's going to be here to talk about that, talk about the Blackhawks and give away. He's got in his hand a pair of pretty great tickets to the Blackhawks game for their home opener on Sunday the 6th, a week from Sunday.
Nice.
So that's all coming your way right very after cool. Judy's News. How about that?
Yeah, awesome. Very nice.
All right. All right, Tom. Well, we'll check back in with you if this develops here.
I think it looks like if this stuff holds together, it's about an hour away from the city right now.
Okay.
So another hour, 15 minutes, it'll be in the city. If you're out in the western suburbs, it's bearing down on you now out toward the Fox Valley. It's probably a little less than that. Let's see. It's
intense
about
stuff.
25 miles away from Aurora now and about 26 miles from St. Charles and barreling eastward at 50 miles an hour. So that puts it into those communities in less than a half an hour.
You said moving quickly.
It is really flying, yes.
Right. Thank you, Tom. Appreciate
you bet, guys. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Tom.
Judy,
bet,
what's
Anna.
Happening right now in the WGN newsroom?
A Cook County judge reassigned for allegedly calling a prosecutor an obscenity.
Here come the Hawks, the mighty Hawks. Take the attack.
Blackhawks fans,
this is huge.
You might want to take a seat right now because you're going to hear some things, my friends. You're going to hear some things. It's going to be a thing. Rocky Wirtz is with us. Mm-hmm. He is the chairman of the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yes.
He's the chairman of many, many, many things. And I want to point out that we have Blackhawks tickets that he's personally going to give to you.
Isn't that amazing?
By way of email, before we are done here.
And they're free.
Along with a copy of the book, The Breakaway, which is the inside story of the Wirtz family business and the Chicago Blackhawks, written by Brian Smith, who's an amazing writer. This is something that is fascinating to me, because this is an unflinching look at your family, and here you are talking about it. And I think it's amazing that, you know, in Chicago, it's a gigantic, important world city, but it's a small town in a lot of ways too, right? And especially with the sports dynasties and business dynasties that were started by families, there's always rumors about families and stories about families, and there's trouble between these people and those people, and you hear about them, and sometimes they make the society pages back when there were newspapers, and now they're just all over the internet, and. This is an unflinching look at these generations, including taking on some of the perceptions that people had about the Wirtz family in a really honest way. So, and you obviously, took part in this, right?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I thought it was a nice way to tell a story about a family that also happens to own a hockey team.
Right.
And we go back a lot of years with my, grandfather, and when he was alive, he died, passed away in 83. And then so many of the people knew him, through dad's eyes that died in 07. And then, the Hawks, in recent years have been lucky enough to have three Stanley Cups. But, there's more to that than that. And so how do we get started? Where do we come from? And we had a lot of stories about the family that the family knew, but no one had put them all together.
Yeah,
and so Brian Smith came to me, and he had written an article in 08 for Chicago Magazine, and that's before the Hawks had won anything. The first time they won the Stanley Cup recently was 2010, and he said, "I want to write a book," and I said, "No, okay, Brian." Then he came back in 13. Then he came back in 15.
Those persistent little journalists,
huh? Persistent, and I said, "Well, there's a couple caveats. The first thing is, any proceeds has to go to Chicago Blackhawk Foundation. That's the first caveat. And the second thing is, it can't be a puff piece. It can't be how great this is or patting me on the back or anything else. I said it has to be honest, and we have to make sure that, that there's plenty of people to talk about and do it, and we cannot, edit what they want to talk about or not. And so,
oh, boy.
But
you did it. I just want to point out that, yes, that is exactly what happened here. This is really honest.
It is beyond candid, and even the excerpts that I've seen so far, father, son, brother battles, you've got love, you've got tragedy, you've got terrible tempers and fights and family stuff that most of us, I think, would want to keep out of all of this. And you certainly have enough accomplishments in the Wirtz family history, and an incredible history, that you could have filled the pages that way.
Well, I think what's important is
there's dysfunction in every family. I mean, if anyone that tells you there's not, you know they're lying.
Right.
So I think what this book can do is it can help relate to the words family that, you know, we're not any different than anyone else. And yes, we happen to have two nickels to rub together, and we've been very, very fortunate. We have our health and a terrific family. But like anything, you have your ups and downs, and how are you able to progress your business from one generation to the next? And that's really my job at this stage. I'm going to be, you know, turning 66. What can I do to make the landscape better for the next Wirtz generation that takes over for me? And that's the whole thing.
And your kids are in the business.
They are, and I have cousins in the business. And
right.
And it really comes back from my grandfather. He started the companies in 1926.
And we should point out too. I think many people will know this, but mm-hmm. for those who are not familiar, is that the Wirtz family not only owns the Blackhawks, but has been a liquor distributing company in Chicago and now the Midwest and now the nation mm-hmm. in a very significant way. And a lot of money was made over the years in that. I mean, the Blackhawks have always been, they've been profitable and unprofitable between years. But really, it's the beverage company that was the driving force here.
Well, then the real estate. So, the Hawks are the public company. The beverage, the wholesale is a middle tier. So we represent products and sell them to retailers that have liquor licenses. And unless you're in the business, you wouldn't even know we're around. And then on the real estate side, unless you've been one of our buildings or stayed there, you wouldn't necessarily know it. But we got our whole start through the real estate side, and we got into sports because my grandfather had bought these buildings. At one time, he had the old Chicago Stadium, Detroit Olympia, the old Madison Square Garden, and then St. Louis Arena, and then bought the franchises in those buildings to have a tenant.
And there's some beautiful buildings in Chicago that you own, and that people probably have walked by a million times on Michigan Avenue or in Streeterville or whatever, mm-hmm. and to come to find out that it's a great story. But with that, there are family members. There has been amazing success. There mm-hmm. are riches, and that combination does have a tendency to turn people against each other. And there is an unflinching moment in this book about the passing of your father in the mid-2000s and the ensuing battle between you and your brother.
Well, it was unfortunate. And my brother worked very closely with my father, but he wasn't able to internalize that and decided he wanted to do something else. And respected him for his wishes, what he wanted to do, but it wasn't going to be with the company. And but you have to realize when Dad passed away in September of 07, that was right at the beginning of the economic crisis we were having. So we were having problems, obviously, with the Hawks. We're having problems. We have a bank here and in down in Florida, so the banking system was tough. The real estate system was tough at that time, and then the beverage business is going through many changes and consolidations. So you had a lot of things going on at the same time, not knowing if we keep the thing afloat or not.
That's amazing. And when you think about how people think, you're rich, you're never going to have a problem. But that's exactly. But big problems are what can be had in a situation like your family situation and like your business situation. So, and you get a lot of. I know that much has been written about the success of the Blackhawks, but mm-hmm. also the success of, you held on to the real estate. You also have built things around the United Center that most major sports franchises, the big legacy sports franchises and all the sports here are starting to do. It is really a real estate play. You see what the Cubs are doing on the north side. You're doing the exact same thing on the west side as well. You built this, you built these, great facilities for hockey, for kids to come out and be able to play. There's more to be done there. And, your family were always very bullish about the west side of Chicago when nobody else was.
Well, it's been the west side's been very, very good to us. And, you think about that back when the Chicago Stadium was built and you had streetcars that would take, fans out there. You didn't have to have parking. And then after the Martin Luther King riots, you had many, depressed areas. And you think when the United Center was built, and, with the help of Jerry Reinsdorf is our partner out there, and how you can transform an area. I mean, it's a classic example of urban development. I was talking to Anna at the break about the Laver Cup. And if you think you bring people in from all over the world.
It was incredible.
And what you saw around the United Center and what you saw around truly a campus and how great it was and how great it was for the city. And it was with all the negativity there is, all the positive side of what that did for our great city, it was something to be very, very proud of.
It made me proud as a Chicagoan just being there, because you saw how many international and national visitors there were who were experiencing the city for one of their first times, or a handful of times for sure, and they put on an amazing show. It was a great fan experience,
right.
And it was awesome
it
tennis.
It was great, and they could go back to the wonderful hotels and the different restaurants, and if you go to the different restaurateurs, and most people in Chicago didn't even realize that the Laver Cup was here. It was more people around the country and around the world knew about it. I mean, we had over 90,000 people there in 2.5 days, and it was not a cheap ticket. So it was
so Ryder Cup of tennis, essentially, is what it is.
It's Europe versus the world
international tennis competition, and the biggest names in tennis were there.
Absolutely,
you had 7 out of the top 10, and it was really exciting. And I'm a tennis, I enjoy watching it. I watch the U.S. Open, but I was completely fascinated. I was there all 3 days with my wife, and I enjoyed every minute of
it. Did you see Djokovic and Federer play doubles for the first time?
I did, and you realize they've never played doubles before.
One of them hit the other in the back at one point. I was like, oh,
yeah,
and doesn't always happen.
And the ball's moving at 110 miles an hour. That cannot feel good.
That hurts.
You know what? It was worse. It was 130 miles. Every first serve was 130 miles an hour. So you think if you get a hockey puck, if you go 100, 100, 200, 3 miles an hour, and you know how fast that is, the reaction that they have on that serve, you wonder how they get those aces. Well, you realize it. I mean, it was so fast, you were better.
The human
the
eye can't follow it.
No, you can't.
Live, I mean, television is it gives you a chance because of the replay, but watching tennis live is so exhilarating because it is amazing. It's dramatic and in its own way kind of violent because of the speed of the ball, right? And the athleticism that these people possess is absolutely amazing. All right, speaking of athleticism that people possess, we want to send you right now to the Hawks home opener. We're going to be there. Cochran and I are doing a pregame show from the United Center a week from Sunday, and then it's opening night. An amazing, emotional tribute to Stan Mikita is going to begin the evening, and it's an original six matchup, right? So it's going to be not a dry eye in the house too. And I know the Toronto fans that are going to be there as well, because it's
original six. It's great.
Yeah.
And if you do us a favor while you're over there, stop in the new restaurant Queenie's, which is right in the atrium. And it's named after my grandmother's, her nickname was Queenie. My grandfather's name is Arthur, and he called Queenie. And so we named the restaurant Queenie's, and so we're excited about that, and I think it's going to be a great fan amenity, and it's open to anyone. You don't have to be a member, and it's really the only thing we have at the United Center that you can just walk in off the street.
And is it some of her favorite recipes, or what is the concept for the food?
I wish she could cook. What she could do is entertain and set a mean table. But
so it's a good time.
Was not her specialty.
All right. National Weather Service is issuing a severe thunderstorm warning right now, and Judy's going to give us Will, Cook,
DuPage,
Lake, Kendall, DuPage, and Kane counties, beginning at right now at 4:52 and ending at 6:22 tonight. So we'll have more details on that. Let me just say this though. Let's right now caller number 21 in honor of Stan Mikita. Caller number 21, 312-981-7200 gets not only the Rocky's two tickets right now that he's just handed me to hand to you, and a copy of the book The Breakaway by Brian Smith. It's an amazing story.
Incredible.
My friends, incredible story about this dynastic family and warts and all. And let me also point out that if you would like to attend one of the book parties, they're going to have them. Rocky and Tony Esposito are going to be doing events where you can buy copies of the book along with an opportunity to get a signed copy of the book for $50. Proceeds, again, going to the Blackhawks Foundation. This Thursday. I can forget what week it is already. this Thursday at the Blackhawk store from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. That's on Michigan Avenue, Michigan and Wacker there, 333 North Michigan Avenue. Then on Saturday at the MB Ice Arena, 1801 West Jackson, from 1 to 3 p.m. And then in the United Center Atrium on Saturday the 29th from 4:30 to 6:30, you can stop by and get these. You can go, obviously, to the Blackhawks website. They're going to have all of that information as well there.
What was really nice is Tony Esposito agreed to write the foreword for the book, so that's why he's a signer, but he knew Dad very well, and so as far as a player to talk about an owner, I thought it was very interesting, and Tony's, you know, foreword to the book.
Right. He had some nice things to say about
it. He did. No, they got along very well, mm-hmm. and Tony and Dad would do contract negotiations, and they were and they liked each other, and they did a good job. And Tony didn't. He said, "I didn't need an agent. I do it myself."
Judy Pilak's got the WGN News update here. What's coming up at the top of the hour?
Governor Rauner helps a convicted felon become mayor of Markham.
You know him from the show Scandal, and now he's got a new show called God Friended Me. Joe Morton stops by the Steve Cochran Show tomorrow morning at 7:10.
So do I, by the way.
Rokan also appearing on the Steve Cochran Show tomorrow, where he and Steve will break down the latest on Dancing with the Stars results. That's what you're going to do.
Really? That's what I'm
sure
going to do?
You'll tackle
I
that.
Like you to read that because I like to know what we're actually doing.
Does he know that you actually don't watch Dancing with the Stars?
I know all about Juan Pablo.
Oh.
Yeah. Or whatever. Coming up, the stories that matter from Judy Pilak in the WGN Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. 2 minutes away. I'm kind of scared.
Why are you scared?
Well, I'm watching the storm come in now.
Oh,
we have
a
vantage point from the WGN Allstate Skyline Studios where you can see the storm approaching as we look out west over the beautiful downtown glass towers of downtown,
mm-hmm.
and then it's
storms are coming.
It looks like an ocean over our head coming in to dump.
It does. We have one of the most beautiful views of any office building, I think. But you're right. When the storms move in, you feel it. It's a little scary.
Yeah, I'm scared.
Me too.
We had a good run.
Should we broadcast from under the table? Bring our microphones down?
It would not be my first time doing that. I should point out, I have crawled under tables before to broadcast.
Get him his thunder vest.
Yeah, that helps.
I know. Where's my thunder vest?
Zip him up. Can we get that for him? Somebody?
I'm going to, and what's really nice is they put a hamper in our office so I could crawl into the hamper.
Perfect. That's a sight to see.
You can lower the microphone into the hamper. It'll sound a little weird.
He has to knock it over first, then crawl into it. Yes. Then someone has to pick him up upright.
Right. Put my thunder shirt on, and I run into the hamper, and I crawl, and I try to actually get underneath all the clothes.
We have to bribe him with a treat to get him out.
Come on. It's all gone now, Ro.
Everything's fine.
No, it's past.
It's a martini.
Yeah, here's
a martini.
It's a martini in your office.
Here, Ro. Here's your martini.
You can hear the ice shaking.
And they put it on the ground, and I just drink it. I just get down on all fours, and I drink it on the ground. Luckily. I lick it. It's weird. It's a very strange thing that I do.
Yeah. Luckily, Tom's killing, so these are moving through rather quickly,
okay.
So it won't be too much time in the hamper.
Thank you.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Number five.
Cliff Huxtable, Bill Cosby, found guilty, obviously, in the sexual assault of Andrea Constand, has been sentenced today. 3 to 10 years in state prison. That did not stop his spokesman, Andrew Wyatt, from going out and saying there will be an appeal because this is a sex war.
It is no accident that the prosecutor still worked so close with anti-black and anti-male activist groups who tried to extort $100 million from Dr. Cosby in 2014 and continues to produce racist and sexist publicity against him through the 35 clients. What is going on in Washington today with Judge Kavanaugh is part of that sex war that Judge O'Neill along with his wife are a part of.
Oh, my.
He also said they persecuted Jesus, too.
That's reaching.
There's a lot of reaching there. Calling the process sexist, I thought, was a nice bonus. Thinking, how does that apply to Bill Cosby? Wasn't it sort of the sexist system that enabled Bill Cosby, a high-profile man with status, a celebrity who was able to get away with this for so long?
Prosecutor Kevin Steele says this is justice.
It was a seminal character on TV, and so was the family, but it was fiction. Before Bill Cosby became a convicted felon, taken away in handcuffs to begin paying for his crimes, a lot of people believed that that's who he was. But we know otherwise. He used his acting skills and that endearing TV personality to win over his victims and then keep them silent about what he did to them. So now, finally, Bill Cosby has been unmasked, and we have seen the real man as he is headed off to prison.
All right. And we have seen pictures of him now let out in handcuffs, not only from the courtroom, but now from the lockup.
Yeah, his mugshot is out. All of that's out. And TMZ has already reported that he will, in fact, have vanilla pudding on the menu. They went through the whole menu.
God.
That's the big thing. I know.
Too soon.
It is
number four.
Interesting day for the President of the United Nations. First, it started with this.
Today I stand before the United Nations General Assembly to share the extraordinary progress we've made. In less than 2 years, my administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country. America's so true. Didn't expect that reaction, but that's okay.
Yeah, no. They were laughing at
him. Had to put it out there, didn't you?
It's one thing to do that at a campaign rally where you got a bunch of people in red hats jumping up and down. Yay! But to do that in front of the United Nations after you've called almost all of them everything but the Son of God, and what? Is he going to, we've done so much, and like, okay. Including Germany. Germany was actually, like, mocking. They were doing that thing with their hands where, like, you know, they're talking, you know? Like Germany was mocking him when he was talking about how they're dependent on Russian oil, and they're like, oh, come on. Please, we have many problems. This is not one.
Yeah.
Hey, that was a Russian accent. I've lost my way. Anyway, well, then, afterwards, he came out, and he was, you know, walking through where there was press assembled, and they asked him about Brett Kavanaugh.
He's never had any charges like this. I mean, charges come up from 36 years ago that are totally unsubstantiated. I mean, you, as watching this, as the president of a great country, Colombia, you must say, how is this possible? 36 years ago, nobody ever knew about it, nobody ever heard about it.
Okay, well, they were high school students 36 years ago, which is why nobody ever knew about it. That's why it wasn't on Fox News. Not to mention the fact that Fox News wasn't on 36 years ago.
And now a new charge comes up, and she said, well, it might not be him, and there were gaps, and she said she was totally inebriated, and she was all messed up, and she doesn't know it was him, but it might have been him. Oh, gee, let's not make him a Supreme Court judge because of that. This is a con game being played by the Democrats also.
Is this a smart move for him to get out there and talk about this the day before it happens for women voters in the suburbs or anywhere else on earth?
When
you heard that, how did you react?
Well, the point he's trying to make there is the second case, which many people have pointed out, including on this very show, seems a little thinly, you know, backed up, and the evidence is not necessarily there. But I think he should let this system play out. It's one day away, and I don't think he needs to sort of fuel the fire there. But he was, to be fair, he was answering questions that people were asking him.
And yesterday,
it wasn't right.
We realized that now we're going to have to define sex. What is sex? Because we had Kavanaugh last night on Fox News say, listen, I was a virgin because I didn't have sex or anything even closely resembling sex through high school and to college and many years thereafter, right?
Right.
Couldn't pin him down exactly when, but whatever it was, he said that. And then I said, you know, now we're going to have a debate about what is sex. And 2 hours later,
it happened.
Up pops up Michael Avenatti to say.
So what exactly is he saying? Is he saying that he did not have sexual intercourse? And are we going to get into a definition
that's the word he
of
used.
Exactly Well, exactly. I mean, are we going to get into a definition of sexual intercourse? I mean, does that mean that he performed oral sex or had oral sex?
God. Oh, God.
Why does he always have to do this great big build-up before the big reveal, like it's a reality show? If there's someone you have who has credible information about this, you know, Supreme Court candidate, shouldn't they already be coming forward? He doesn't have to do 20 interviews in advance of it and play this game like it's WWE.
Oh, God. This whole thing. Although Avenatti is the perfect match for the Trump thing. But the whole thing's ridiculous. I want them all to go away. I want Avenatti to go away. I would like all of this crazy reality TV government to go away. I want real guys. I'd even take John Bolton and that wacky mustache because he looks like he should be there.
Yes.
Right? I mean, I would leave Nikki Haley, keep her. I got a whole thing. I got keep them and dump them. I got all the whole thing. Start all over again. I'd even take Mike Pence. Mike Pence creeps me out. I'd take him up there because he looks earnest. He looks like a guy in a movie playing the President of the United States. Donald Trump is comfortable. It made the world laughed at him today. Everybody says the world's laughing at us. They laughed at him today. It's not the best. Anyway, that's a separate issue.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get to your 3, 2, 1. But first, Judy, what's coming up?
Remembering Chicago Police Commander Paul Bauer.
Illinois Department of Transportation bringing you the traffic with Violetta.
The Bucks sail into Wrigley. All hands on deck. Cubs Pirates. Tuesday Night Baseball tonight at 7 on WGN-TV.
Top 5 continues.
Number 3.
With Tom Arnold. When is he going to go away?
Well, he's got a new show, so he's stirring it up everywhere.
Oh! He was out with Megyn Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a goof-on-goof crime, as far as I'm concerned.
No victims there.
And he talked about his scuffle that he had with the apprentice producer, who also produced Touched by an Angel. Mm-hmm. I don't know how this all works. Mark Burnett mm-hmm. and his wife, Roma Downey, at the Emmys.
That's no laughing matter for to do that. And it didn't happen, right? Am I right?
Because
you keep defending Kavanaugh, those guys. Maybe you defend me for 1 second here.
No, I won't. Oh. And I am not defending Kavanaugh. I am asking for a fair hearing.
Hold on.
No. People are looking to condemn Kavanaugh without even hearing the evidence.
No.
I will set the record straight. It's my show. What I want is a fair hearing for Kavanaugh and for his accuser. That's what's fair.
Oh, you're right. You absolutely a fair. I agree with you 1,000%.
Uh-oh. Mm-hmm.
But then, what about those Trump tapes he's looking for?
Listen, if there is a tape of the President of the United States showing him on camera before he was president saying the N-word, America
needs
to know that.
No, what I want to show you is one day over there and what it's like in the White House right now. The incompetence, he makes Don Jr. cry one day. You'll see him sexually harassing women. And maybe that would change.
Wait, with all due respect, Tom, we've already seen that.
Okay.
Hey, I just want to say that I am so still upset that he and Roseanne didn't make it.
I know this could have been perfect.
I know. Those two are so made for each other.
So made for each other.
Oh, my God.
What happened there?
All right. And finally.
Number 1.
Oh, wait. Hold on. I forgot number 2, didn't I?
Oh, you skipped over that one.
Hold on.
And it's a good one.
Wait, yeah, it is a good one. Hold on. Stand by.
Number 2.
Right now, it's raining so hard, I'm doing both.
Trying to get through it.
Stephen Colbert, he has the same qualms and questions that I have about a 17-year-old Brett Kavanaugh keeping really exquisite records about the parties he was going to back in high school on his Trapper Keeper.
He kept a calendar in high school, and we have obtained a copy. I believe it was the 1982 Alibi of the Day calendar. Onto their high school calendars. Have you kept your stuff from high school?
No,
I don't. The only things I have left over from high school are deep emotional scars.
I'm with him on that. All right, and finally,
number 1.
Isn't it bad enough we have to listen to this that Maroon 5 is playing Super Bowl is coming up in February.
I'm not on board with this yet. I really am not.
No, I'm not either. But you know, people have been asking, you know, of all the great stadium rockers, why haven't the Foo Fighters been asked to do it? And Dave Grohl may have just answered the question.
I've had multiple conversations over the years with them where they say, we want to have a rock and roll band, and do you think you could do it? Do you think you could do a stadium? And I was like, yeah, man. I mean, we do it all the time. And we're like, oh, my God, I think we're going to do the Super Bowl. And then it'll be like Madonna or Katy Perry or something like that. And so I actually got really hammered at this party in France once and got to meet the dude that does the Super Bowl thing. And I was like, I don't even want to do the Super Bowl. I used to want to do it, and I don't want to do it anymore.
Okay.
So that's why that one didn't work out.
All right. I'm not sure I believe it, but okay. Whatever. It's good enough. It's close enough. Let's go.
The top five at five.
This is a high-quality person, and I certainly hope it would be a horrible insult to our country if this doesn't happen. And it'll be a horrible, horrible thing for future political people, judges, anything you want. It'd be a horrible thing. It cannot be allowed to happen. And the Democrats are playing a con game. C-O-N. A con game.
I do appreciate
the
disambiguation that the president did there. Con game, no relation.
Right, not C-O-N-N.
Right.
He spelled C-O-N. That out for us.
Thank you very much.
No confusion.
A.B. Stoddard is joining us right now. And I asked this of Anna about 20 minutes ago when we played some tape of the president today, and doubling down on the second accuser now of Judge Kavanaugh, the woman from Yale, who says that he exposed himself to her at a party there, a drunken party, and the president saying, well, you know, what are we supposed to do about that? She was drunk. How do we know? Blah, 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 blah. And what is fascinating, A.B. Stoddard, is that you wrote in Real Clear Politics on Saturday, you published a piece in which you quote a Republican consultant saying, I'd lose the House to get Judge Kavanaugh. Is that really the choice Republicans have here?
Oh, yeah. I think if you look at the polling that they're seeing, I can't remember, and I'm so sorry, streaking through a fire hose today, but there was some polling out in some Senate races that are key, and it was basically looking at women voters, and these Democrats who are up for re-election in Trump states are doing better with women, you know, in the double digits. I mean, 17 points, 24 points. And so, no, women are not a monolith, and there are Republican women who desperately want Judge Kavanaugh to be seated on the bench on the Supreme Court. However, the college-educated white woman voter is going to be the voter of the midterms. If Democrats are voted in to a majority in the House and or the Senate, they will thank that voter, because voters of color and young voters are not going to show up in the numbers we expect that these women are, and they're really mad. And so what you see among Republicans is a desperate push that if they lose it all, at least they'll have Justice Kavanaugh. And so there, you know, you heard from Rush, tweeted out by the president. There's lots of exhortation from conservatives that if you can't repeal and replace Obamacare and you can't seat this justice, what are you good for anyway? With, I guess, the idea being that they'll vote Democrat or stay home. I find that really far-fetched. But basically, they need to know when they wake up on November 7th that they have him on the bench, and they're going to do whatever they can to push this through.
All right. So in terms of what we're going to see from political theater on Thursday, the Republicans are not going to actually question the Dr. Blasey Ford, who's going to be the only person, the only accuser that's going to be at this particular hearing on Thursday morning. She'll go first, then Kavanaugh will respond. But Republican senators are not going to do the questioning. They've hired a prosecutor to do the questioning. Who's a woman? Is that the only thing they can do? Is it a good move? What do you think about it?
Right. I find the president's description of this as a con job, as if both these women are lying, to be incredibly offensive and ludicrous. At the same time, I find the Democrats' complaint about some over 80 white males bending over backwards to get a lawyer who's better able to ask the right questions and has experience in sexual abuse and assault cases, the fact that they, and who happens to be, I guess, a female, and they haven't released her name, the idea that the Democrats are jumping all over this, yes, it's their constitutional duty. Guess what? Basically, members of Congress in both parties have ceded their entire constitutional responsibilities as a separate and co-equal branch for years in my career of covering them. They want to do nothing but pass 11th-hour spending bills to keep the government open. They don't legislate since basically Obamacare. And so the idea, and you know, we know they got, Republicans got the tax cut through, but they've abdicated all of their oversight in the era of the Trump presidency, and they refuse to do this stuff anyway. I think the idea that Republicans are bending over backwards to try to do this professionally and sensitively with the right questioner is something that Democrats shouldn't be criticizing.
What about the second woman? Will she be testifying? It doesn't look like it. Deborah Ramirez. And then the third person that Avenatti is saying he will reveal, and some big reveal tomorrow. What about that person? Likely she'll participate on Thursday with the Senate Judiciary Committee?
We did hear interesting comments from Sarah Sanders, the press secretary today, as well as Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, a Republican who's, you know, raised a lot of concerns and is withholding drawing a conclusion until she hears from Professor Ford, that this second accuser should be allowed to be heard. There, it seems like that's not happening, obviously, on Thursday, and I don't know that the committee Republicans have made way for a process for her. I would imagine she'd have to come to the committee, and I don't know that she has. There's a lot of criticism about the way that her story was reported in The New Yorker and the fact that it's not corroborated enough. I think at this point for them to just go forward with Dr. Ford is one thing, unless more is told or light is shed on her story. Avenatti, you know, I just what am I going to say about him that hasn't already been said? I mean, he should have come up with someone when they were ready to come into the spotlight. And the idea of, like, you know, drum rolling it on Twitter, right, I just think makes this actually, I think it actually hurts the Democrats and hurts maybe Professor Ford. So I think he should stay out until he has the goods.
You know what you could do for Avenatti? You could just take a video of your skin crawling.
Ugh.
Is what you could do. Because that's
so
what I
true.
Do. When I say, I'd like to, if I could just show my teeth hurting every time I see him on television. I mean, it's like, I mean, last night, now we're going to discuss what sex is. No, I don't want you discussing any of it.
No.
I don't. Hey, by the way, just now, it is not just by the way, this is just breaking, that the Senate Judiciary Committee will vote on Brett Kavanaugh's nomination on Friday to push him out of committee on Friday, regardless of what happens tomorrow, they say.
Yeah, well, like I said, I mean, they were saying Friday, or so maybe the full Senate will be Saturday. Monday is October 1 and the start of the session of the Supreme Court. They seem to believe that in light of all of this explosion, that they can basically have him in a black robe by Monday. I find the whole thing, there's a long time to the midterm election.
Okay, but let me stop you right there. If they do, let's just play this out. Let's say that tomorrow it's a bit of the testimony does not have any bombshells associated with it. So they push him out of committee on Friday. They put him, they fast track a vote on Saturday. The first Saturday vote the Senate has taken since the Civil War, apparently. And then they put him in a black robe on Monday, and there's a picture of him, going into the Supreme Court from the judicial parking lot. Let's say all of that happens. How do Democrats then play that for the next 6 weeks until the election?
Right. I mean, I think what we've seen of them in the last 2 weeks, and what we can expect, is a really cynical political ploy to really exploit these women's stories. I don't know if they're true. I really think that we will hear no end to how powerful the testimony of Professor Ford was in their view, and what a railroad job Senate Republicans did to confirm someone who had all these questions and cloud over him. There's always the possibility that Ramirez or Ford go on television on 60 Minutes and give a dramatic recounting of something. The Ramirez story, again, I have a lot of problems with it, but they're not going to go quietly. So they're going to spend 6 weeks, if he's the justice of the Supreme Court on Monday, October 1, they're going to talk about it every day and night until November 6 when the polls close. And you can be sure, because they're going to say this was a railroad job and that the Senate Republicans surely could have given FBI probes that take only a matter of days, and have the full resources of FBI to look into these allegations, could have taken another 2 weeks. And you know what the truth is? They can. Republicans can do that, and they're not going to.
That's an interesting thing that has happened here. We haven't talked about Russia very much. However, while this is going on, also on Thursday, Donald Trump meets with Rod Rosenstein to decide on his fate. The smart money, in which I count myself in it, is that it's a push, that they don't do anything.
Yeah, you know what they want? They want him to stay in a job and be tortured like death by Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan. And that's what the president will choose, because it's hanging him out to dry. The New York Times reporting said he doesn't want to go up to Capitol Hill and be asked under oath about these conversations he had in private that were later leaked to the press about how bonkers the White House is and how unfit the president is to be commander in chief and whether or not they should exercise the 25th Amendment and people should wear wires to gather intelligence on this. And so I think that, you know, the best thing for Rod Rosenstein is to be fired, and Trump's going to do the opposite, which is to keep him in the job. Obviously, Republicans are begging him not to fire him anyway, and then just let him, you know, be tortured in like a slow death by a thousand cuts with the Freedom Caucus guys who want to impeach him.
Will he have to testify about...
Just keep on fundraising, and I think he probably will. They have over the Department of Justice, and is not that in any other administration a fireable offense? Yes. So instead of firing him, torture him with under oath testimony about the fact that he was insubordinate and suggesting people
just soften him up, and they'll make him just another part of the big state, deep state conspiracy that
big time
is what. Basically, it's what's left, right, in terms of any kind of an argument that, you know, that Republicans have to try to defend Donald Trump. The last piece here
If Rosenstein is gone on Friday, Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows and Nunes don't get to raise money and like talk about this all the time.
Right. But I mean, the deep state is all they got left is that don't believe anything that you see coming out of any of the investigations. Don't believe the FBI. Don't believe the Justice Department. Don't believe the Attorney General, who is the Trump Attorney General. Don't believe the Deputy Attorney General, who is a Trump Deputy Attorney General. Don't believe any of these people. It is all part of the deep state. They are all lying. This whole thing is a gigantic scam on you, the lost, forgotten about voter, and they want to lose and forget about you one more time.
Totally. And Dave Bossie and Corey Lewandowski have another book. Their other book has been out for like all of 7 months, Let Trump Be Trump. And they have a new one coming out called, you know, I don't know, it's something that subtitles The Deep State That's Undermining the Presidency. Yeah. And it's all about people getting, you know, who are out for Trump and the deep state. And so that's sort of the theme of 2020, right? It's like that's his campaign, is that he's going to purge the deep state or something. So it's very effective. And like I said, it's a political nightmare for Republicans if Rod Rosenstein is fired Thursday. So, you know, the best way to torture him is to keep him on the job and have these guys for hearings all the time.
Very Game of Thrones. I remember when they did that to Reek or whatever his name was.
Oh, you know, poor Game of Reek.
No, that's good.
He's had a tough go.
They're going to Reek this guy is what they're going to do. It's going to be very bad. Very, very bad. All right, AB, thank you very much.
AB.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Right. But then remember, then they cut Reek's stuff off and all that.
And then he got to take a bath eventually because he turned in his sister.
But he got out, though. And then all of a sudden, is he a good guy or a bad guy? I don't know. This whole damn thing is Game of Thrones.
It is.
Judy, what's coming up at the top of the hour in the WGN newsroom?
Rokan stops by the Steve Cochran Show tomorrow morning at 9:40. See, yeah, great guy. And you'll be discussing Dancing with the Stars results. That's on the agenda, so brush up.
I watched a little bit of last night. I was on one of the many monitors I was watching last night.
Did you like what you saw?
I didn't understand what I was looking at.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, who are these people?
With that show.
I mean, they are mislabeling that show. It's dancing with people you've never heard of before.
I know. And then you get to know them, and then you feel like you know them by the end.
Right. Am I supposed to know these people? And then I always wondered, do Kevin and Violetta know who these people are?
Nah, really.
Nah, exactly. So then who knows who they are?
Well, what I find funny is the young people, how could they be washed up stars already? They're young.
Yes.
That's true.
Just tells you the fickle nature of the entertainment industry.
I don't like that.
Well, they have one from Chicago, a guy on it. Grocery Store Joe. Have we seen him?
Oh, yeah, I know Joe.
Yeah?
I know Bobby Bones. from the country station.
What? Who?
Bobby Bones. He's a DJ.
Oh, is he a nationally syndicated DJ?
Yeah.
Oh, Bobby Bones. You're Bobby Bones.
He knows our friend, the DJ.
Yeah, Bobby Bones. I work with him.
He's on the country station.
Jimmy Harden back then. And,
mean son of a gun.
Yeah, Harden and Bones. All right, coming up, the stories that matter with Judy Pyle from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlazes. I'm kind of fretting here for a couple of reasons. You got the storm moving through. A lot of damage up on the North Shore, we're told already. Trees down.
Yeah.
The northwest suburbs of Chicago hit pretty hard. The areas to the west of there, all the way out, you know, west toward DeKalb, also very hard hit by these fast-moving, really violent storms. Not tornado producers, at least at the moment, but severe thunderstorms, huge downpours, huge winds. So.
Yeah. Just a few minutes ago, it looked like there was a dark gray blanket moving over the top of the buildings here in downtown Chicago. Now it's just gone all gray and misty.
Gray and misty.
We haven't seen much rain yet, though, here, have we?
That's part of that morning team, too. Great, Misty.
We've missed you, cheesy DJ guy.
Thank
it's been
you.
Inappropriate for you to weigh in on most of the subject matter we've talked
true.
About lately.
Well, that's because I've done most of the things we talked about.
Yeah.
All right, let me just, can I, you read this promo. I'm supposed to be on the Cochran Show tomorrow talking about Dancing with the Stars
is on the agenda for you and Steve Cochran to talk about.
So last night as I'm surfing around watching, I was watching Monday Night Football. I was watching the cable news channels to see the Kavanaugh, and also then I had to see Avenatti on Chris Cuomo. And that's like, it is like a testosterone face-off between the two of them. They literally, both of them squeak. At some point, Chris Cuomo, his eyes, his like eyelids have muscles on them, and his eyes start to, his eyeballs sweat. It's not tearing.
No.
They're sweating.
I always notice his neck starts to bulge as he sort of gets, you know, very animated.
That's right, my brother.
Angry.
And it's everything's like professional wrestling with him. That's right, my brother. Thank you. Oh, I'll be watching. Oh, God, I love you. And then every once in a while, he'll turn and flex through his suit.
Well.
And you can see these pythons emerging through, you know, underneath his you know, beautifully coiffured or whatever you call that.
Mm-hmm. His
beautifully
jackets.
Jackets, yeah.
Really.
You're like, oh, God.
Beautiful.
Oh, what's he doing? He's making me look bad. And then you got Avenatti, who's just like, Avenatti's like a Disney character, like from the Jungle Book or something. You know, it's like one of the, that shows up. Oh, come with me, my pretty. You know, it's a weird, very weird dude, man.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about this whole way. He's just sort of dangling that he has this person that he's going to reveal to us.
Right.
But we have to wait for it. Like, you know, it's some kind of reality show.
It's crazy. But then I land on Dancing with the Stars.
Okay, you did. You eventually got there.
Which does tell me that there's really, that I needed a break. And the only break I could find was this. And that John Schneider was on. He's, you know, the guy from Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh, yeah, he's on.
Hasn't gotten any older.
Looks the same?
Yeah, he looks the same. He's a pretty good dancer. But he's the guy that jumped in and out of that car, right? The Daisy Duke. What was the name of the car? The General Lee, right?
General Lee. Good recall on that.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then the Daisy Duke, that was Daisy Duke, she was the sister who wore the tight Daisy Dukes.
Mm-hmm. These boots were made for walking, right?
That's a different thing.
No, different.
No.
Entirely
that's
different.
Nancy Sinatra.
But they wear Daisy Dukes in that music video. Because Daisy Dukes are just short shorts. There's also that song, Daisy Dukes, right? Remember from the
90s? What was the one where Jessica Simpson was like half naked dancing on the car?
The boots were made for walking. Yeah.
Oh, that version of it. Oh, wearing Daisy Dukes. Mm-hmm. I see what you did
and
there.
She was
very risque
the car.
Music video.
Yeah, okay. What wasn't it? Now she's
wasn't
like...
She?
Now, isn't Jessica Simpson now like a mom who's like she, next thing you know, she's going to be doing a baking show on HGTV.
She's a successful businesswoman with an empire of clothing and shoe line.
Mm-hmm.
I love her clothes, actually.
I like her shoes.
She must have toned down a little bit from the shorty shorts. I don't buy those.
She's got something going on. But there's a guy from Chicago on here, Grocery Store Joe.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw this on my Insta. Who is this guy?
He's apparently, his grandfather was a reputed gangster, according to the Tribune. His dad, a cop. He's Grocery Store Joe from Chicago, the TV sensation with a megawatt smile.
But what does he do? Wasn't he on The Bachelor?
He was on The
Bachelor. You guys know
right,
The Bachelorette.
So he was on The Bachelorette, gets dumped off The Bachelorette, right? Wasn't that like a whole... Wasn't he like one of the final ones, and then he's the one that they make into the patsy? Like, oh yeah, I love you, and I really didn't love you. Get out.
Apparently he was seen as a very sincere kind of guy, like, so people fell in love with his sincerity. But he was on Bachelor in Paradise too, wasn't that?
Yeah, they
crazy?
Moved him over to Bachelor in Paradise.
Right.
And then God knows what happened. Isn't The Bachelor in Paradise where they send like all the people who are gonna cause trouble?
Yes.
Like isn't it? Wasn't there a sexual assault thing happened on Bachelor
right.
in Paradise?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't know what goes on there. Anyway, so then, but now I got to know am I supposed to go for this guy because he's from Chicago?
I think so. You got to go with the local guy unless there's someone else who's super appealing. Who else? Did you like anybody you saw when you watched?
No. I mean, I just was on, just kind of watching it, over another TV, so it was like, I wasn't even listening to it. I'm just watching them move.
So you didn't really get engaged in any of the personalities or?
No, Mary Lou Retton is in this. And
wasn't she already
in this? I thought she'd already been there.
Is it her second go around?
I don't think so. I think it's just somebody. Mary Lou Retton fits into a category for me of certain types of
That's
Olympians.
Right. They have gymnasts on a lot, and they always do so well.
Ivana Lynch is here. She's Luna from Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
You know her? No?
Which one is she?
Never heard of her.
She's blonde. She's Luna. She's kind of the weird one in Harry Potter.
I think I know who that is.
And Tinashe? Tinashe? Who is this?
Tinashe.
Tinashe? T-I-N-A-S-H-E. I'm like, I swear to God, Wally Phillips right now would have a better time explaining this to you than I would.
The only person I know is DeMarcus Ware, former football player, Cowboys, Broncos.
I thought you'd know Alexis Wren. She's a Maxim model.
What's that supposed to mean, Violetta?
Yeah.
Just feel like it's a magazine you might frequent.
Yeah. I don't know. What does anybody do with Maxim anymore? Let's be honest.
I don't even know it's still around.
Juan Pablo is the guy from Fuller House, the Argentinian actor.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I like him.
Yeah, I have no idea.
He's Juan Pablo.
Okay. I know him.
Did all celebrities just say we're boycotting the Dancing with Celebrities or Dancing with the Stars? I don't know who any of these people are.
I know. What has happened here?
I mean, it always was sort of like people who are washed up or people you really never heard of. This is like the worst list I've seen by far.
And Alexis Wren, why is she, what's going on with her?
She's a Maxim model.
She is?
Yeah.
Really?
She was on the cover. Mm-hmm. But you know what's funny? The dancers now are more the celebrities because they're the ones we see season mm-hmm. after season and recognize. But
okay, I just looked up Alexis Wren. That's who I'm rooting for.
Yeah, I thought so.
I don't know. Really? The picture that I have here.
Yeah, she's cute.
I have a Penn State thing going on here.
What?
I don't know what that means. But no, she's beautiful.
It's Penn State. Nice uniform, bad helmet.
I don't see a Penn State.
No,
uniform.
She's got a great face. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're talking about?
I'm just saying.
Did I mention Bobby Bones?
You did mention Bobby Bones.
I thought he was a lot. So he's like the.
Oh, right. There's also, you guys, there's Joe from Facts of Life, Nancy McKeown. She's on it.
Oh, yeah. Oh. We know them.
You don't know him. It's a her.
She's a her.
It's a her. Joe is a her.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah.
There's Grocery Store Joe, and then there's Joe from Facts of Life.
Well,
Joe.
What's funny about Grocery Store Joe is people on my Instagram from Chicago are like, oh, yeah, this is my guy. This is my guy. I'm like, how do people actually know this guy in Chicago or not?
Well, if anybody knew a guy named Grocery Store Joe, I would anticipate it would be you on this program. Right?
I guess I do.
This would be one of those situations where they go, oh, yeah, I know Grocery
Joe. Yeah,
I know him. Yeah.
I know Joe.
He's a concrete cowboy.
Yeah. I think those people are really promoting him within the city, but those people are not, obviously.
We're going to make it big off Joe, guys.
Yeah.
Let's promote him.
They're not
we'll
Violetta's crowd, though. They're not big enough for her.
Right,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
So he lives in West Town. He's 32 years old, and he once co-owned a Southside grocery store, thus the name Grocery Store Joe. But he's got a very colorful past. I mean, he's, mob ties in his family, according to the Tribune.
So you get on Dancing with the Stars these days, open your own grocery shop.
Mm-hmm. Does Tom Hagen show up? and take out with it. What's the host name that loses weight every hour on the hour?
Oh, yeah, he's not,
literally by Halloween, he's going to be a skeleton.
Well, there's Aaron Andrews, right?
Yeah.
And Tom.
And Tom Bergeron.
Does
Tom Hagen show up and take Tom Bergeron out and explain to him, listen, Grocery Store Joe is going to win this competition. You understand what I'm saying?
He's got people.
He's going to get this part. Never going to give him that part.
So you're telling us you own a grocery store. You're in. That's what we're looking for these days.
He's a bachelorette. I don't know. He's part of that whole thing. It comes. See, ABC now, the problem with ABC is that it's got its own ecosystem where it just replicates itself.
Right.
Right?
Just different versions. Okay, this time you're the bachelor. Yeah. This time you're the dancer. This time you're the funny guy. This time go cry on this TV show.
It's the television version of the Galapagos Islands. None of the people ever get off the islands.
They just reproduce and mutate.
And they're just mutating and they're, oh, you're a bachelor. No, now you're the head of the ABC News. No, you're doing this. No, you're doing that. Oh, you know, we could use you at ESPN. You know, it's sort of
that'll
like,
happen probably.
Yeah, I don't know.
He got the lowest score of the night on the premiere night.
Oh,
so
this could be it for Grocery Store Joe.
Well, I don't know.
Did he get a shopping cart for his dance move?
Yeah, he had a real shopping cart.
Let me explain something to you. Grocery Store Joe is going to be able to make it through this. You understand? What do you mean he had the lowest score? He has the highest score now. All right, let's check in with Judy. Find out what's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the news.
The Chicago Archdiocese settles another lawsuit.